Hello and welcome to Introduction to Meteorology at the University of Hawaii at Manoa with Dr. Jennifer Griswold. Thank you for joining us. Today's lecture will cover atmospheric constituents and vertical structure of temperature and pressure. In preparation for today's lecture, you should have read through Chapter 1 from the Arin's text. One of the largest takeaways and the best way to start your introduction to the atmosphere is to realize the difference between weather and climate. Weather is the state of the atmosphere at any given time at a specific place. Climate is a description of aggregate weather conditions, or, in a different way, the sum of statistical weather information that helps describe a place or region. A handy way to remember the difference is the phrase, "Climate is what you expect, but weather is what you get." Now that we have a basic idea in our minds, we can start to discuss where weather and ultimately climate occurs. Our atmosphere. The atmosphere is very thin, so thin that 99% of it is found within 19 miles or 30 kilometers of the surface of the Earth. That's the approximate distance of driving from UH Manoa campus down the H1 highway over the 63 to Kailua. As you can imagine, that distance is not very great, and that the thickness of the air we need to breathe to survive is not very thick. It's obvious that we need air to breathe, but we also need the atmosphere to protect us from damaging ultraviolet radiation from the sun. We'll talk about what part of the atmosphere provides this protection soon. Note that whenever you see diagrams of the atmosphere, they are usually not to scale. It would be very difficult to accurately show the atmosphere on a piece of paper in comparison to the radius of the Earth, which is 3,959 miles. We're going to be talking a lot about what's in the atmosphere, what humans emit to the atmosphere, and what nature contributes. First, we need a general understanding of the modern atmospheric composition. The majority of Earth's atmosphere is nitrogen. 78% of every breath you take is nitrogen, or N2. Oxygen, or O2, is the second most common gas at 21%. Argon is the third most common gas at approximately 1%. There are many other gases, particulates, and liquid droplets in the atmosphere. These are in much smaller quantities than nitrogen, oxygen, and argon. Some of these include carbon dioxide, or CO2, from plant respiration and combustion of fossil fuels. It is known as a greenhouse gas, which we'll talk about in great detail later in the semester, but we'll briefly discuss today. Methane, or CH4, is produced by cows, wetlands, rice paddies, low oxygen environments, and from combustion processes as well. It's also a greenhouse gas that warms the Earth. Ozone, or O3, is found both in the stratosphere, which is considered good ozone, and in the troposphere, where it's considered bad ozone. We'll talk about what those are in this lecture and later on in the semester. Many people are familiar with the term ozone hole and know that it's a bad thing. We'll spend time on ozone today and later in the semester as well. Water vapor, or H2O vapor, is very variable in the atmosphere. It ranges from 0% in very dry regions to as high as 5% in very humid regions. This varies obviously by region and time. Some other gases in appreciable amounts include hydrogen, H2, helium, HE, carbon monoxide, CO, ammonia, NH3, nitrogen oxide, NO, nitrous oxide, NO2, sulfur dioxide, SO2, nitrogen dioxide, NO2, and particles called aerosols that include dust, smoke, sea salt, ash, and many other types of particles. You may be wondering why nitrogen is the most common gas in the atmosphere and where it came from. The answer lies in three facts. Nitrogen is volatile in most of its forms, which means it likes to change from solid or liquid to its gaseous state. Secondly, it is unreactive with materials that make up the solid Earth, so it isn't taken out of the atmosphere by reacting with the ocean or rocks. Third, it is very stable in the presence of solar radiation. That means that once it is in its gaseous state, it doesn't change much and the sun's radiation doesn't modify it. But where did all the nitrogen come from in the first place? Over geologic time, it has built up in the atmosphere to a much greater extent than oxygen, since it isn't very reactive in its gaseous state. Since it becomes a gas, it is likely to stay that way. It is an important component of life on Earth and is part of the nitrogen cycle that involves plants, bacteria, fungi, and animals. In this case, nitrogen becomes parts of other molecules like nitrates, nitrites, ammonium, and others. Nitrogen is a component of commercial fertilizers. Now that we have an understanding of where nitrogen came from, we can ask where the oxygen came from. The primary way in which the Earth generates oxygen is through photosynthesis. Photosynthesis accounts for 98% of the world's atmospheric oxygen. The breakup of water molecules by ultraviolet radiation, a type of radiation, again, that we'll address in a few weeks, composes the other 1% to 2%. Finally, we can address mysterious argon. Many of us aren't familiar with argon as a gas in the atmosphere. Argon is formed by radioactive decay, but note it is not radioactive itself. It is released slowly into the atmosphere by volcanic activity. It is an inert and non-radioactive gas and does not react chemically, so it gradually accumulates in the atmosphere. A fun fact about argon is that it is used in neon lights. We can also discuss the gases that are found in smaller concentrations. Let's start with carbon dioxide, since it's relatively famous and newsworthy. CO2 is an efficient absorber of energy emitted by the sun. Even though it is present in tiny amounts, it is very important for determining the overall temperature of the atmosphere. The current amount of CO2 in the atmosphere is 0.03968%, or 396.81 parts per million. This amount, or percentage, is relatively constant over the Earth at any given moment. However, over time, a steady increase in global CO2 since the 1960s has been observed. The most famous graph showing the increase in CO2 over time is known as the Keeling curve, and it shows the increase in CO2 from 1960 to the present, as measured at Mauna Loa on the Big Island of Hawaii. The variable components are important to weather and climate as well. Water vapor varies from 0 to 5% by volume. We also see the manifestation of water as clouds and precipitation. As water vapor, it also acts as a greenhouse gas and heats the atmosphere like CO2. A very important fact about water is that it releases and absorbs energy when it changes states. For example, going from a gas to a liquid or a liquid to a solid. Next, we have aerosols. Aerosols are tiny solid and liquid particles. They include dust, pollution, sea salt, ash, smoke, biogenic particles like pollen and bacteria, and liquid particles like various types of chemicals such as hydrochloric acid. We'll spend a lot of time on aerosols when we discuss climate change and air pollution. We can also talk about ozone. Ozone, or O3, is three oxygen molecules joined together. It is concentrated high above the surface in the stratosphere. This is known as the ozone layer, and it protects us from ultraviolet or UV rays from the sun. UV radiation is what gives us sunburns. The ozone hole is famous because the threat of increased skin cancer became a concern. Less ozone means more UV radiation reaches the surface to cause skin damage. The hole is predominantly found over the Antarctic, although it can happen over the Arctic as well, and in fact did so in 2011. We'll talk in detail about ozone and the ozone hole later in the semester, but the main thing you need to take away from today's lecture is that ozone is necessary to protect life on Earth. After the hole was discovered and that the cause, chlorofluorocarbons, were identified, scientists and governments worked together to solve the problem. The Montreal Protocol was the resulting legislation that took CFCs off the market to prevent further damage to the ozone layer. It is a prime example of the good that can be done when scientists and politicians work together. If only we could do the same with regulating greenhouse gases. This brings us to a good idea of what our current atmosphere is like. You may be wondering if our atmosphere has always been this way. In fact, it has not. The atmosphere has changed dramatically since the original formation of the Earth. The Earth's first atmosphere, about 4.6 billion years ago, was primarily hydrogen and helium. That atmosphere was swept away by solar winds and escaped the newly formed Earth's hot surface. Next, the primeval phase followed, and it is an atmosphere unfamiliar to us. We'll go into detail about this atmosphere in a moment. The modern phase is what we just discussed, including nitrogen, oxygen, and argon as the primary constituents. The primeval atmosphere was very different than the modern phase. The principal source of atmospheric gases at that time was outgassing. Outgassing is the release of gases from rock through volcanic eruptions and the impact of meteorites. The primeval atmosphere was mostly composed of CO2, nitrogen, water vapor, a little methane, ammonia, SO2, and hydrochloric acid. The radioactive decay of an isotope of potassium started adding argon, which eventually became the third most common gas in the modern atmosphere. Something important that you'll notice that is missing from that list is free oxygen, O, and O2 that we need to breathe. After 4 billion years, the surface of the Earth cooled. This allowed water vapor to condense into clouds and for rain to occur. Oceans and rivers formed. The Earth's primeval atmosphere was very warm due to all the CO2 in the atmosphere. However, with the presence of liquid water on Earth, CO2 was able to dissolve and further cool the Earth. Basically, rain and oceans washed out some of the CO2, bringing down the Earth's overall temperature. After life emerged, primarily photosynthetic bacteria began to produce oxygen and O2 began to build up, bringing us to our modern atmosphere. We finished our discussion of our introduction to the composition of the Earth's atmosphere. Now we're going to move on to discussing the extent and structure of the atmosphere. There's no clear boundary at the upper atmosphere. It just dissipates to the vacuum of space. The atmosphere rapidly thins as altitude increases. Thus, density is said to decrease rapidly with altitude. Half of the atmosphere lies below 5.5 kilometers, or about 3.5 miles from the surface, which is much lower than the top of Mount Everest. As density decreases with height, so does pressure. Since the amount of gas molecules decrease with altitude, the weight of those molecules decreases as well. The rate of pressure decrease is not constant since air is highly compressible. It would be beneficial for you to have a mental image of the change in pressure with height in your mind for the rest of the semester. You'll also note that something else that keeps gases towards the surface is gravity. So the two biggest factors contributing to the structure of density and pressure for air is gravity and the compressibility of air. We can talk about the standard pressure at the surface where humans live. This is called a standard atmospheric pressure. The average value is 1,013.25 millibars, or 1,013.25 hectopascals, or 29.92 inches of mercury. You may be wondering what a millibar is. The abbreviation is lowercase mb. It is a unit of pressure, as is a hectopascal and an inch of mercury. We'll talk in detail about measuring pressure in a couple of weeks and the instrumentation used to obtain those values. For now, just remember those numbers, 1,013.25 and 29.92. Near the surface, air is more dense. Pressure decreases rapidly with altitude at first and then more slowly as you go higher in the atmosphere as fewer and fewer molecules are present. Pressure isn't the only thing that changes with altitude. Temperature does as well. You will need to be able to draw the thermal structure of the atmosphere and identify all layers from memory on a quiz or exam. It is very important that you understand why temperature changes with height. The bottommost layer of the atmosphere is known as the troposphere. It is warmed by the surface of the Earth. This is the layer where weather happens. It is called the troposphere because this is where the most vertical and horizontal mixing of air occurs. Tropo is Greek for change, and we see the most change in the troposphere. We study this layer with ground-based instruments, aircraft, and balloons. In this layer, temperature decreases with height. We describe this decrease as the environmental lapse rate. A lapse rate is simply a change in temperature with height. For the troposphere, this change with height is 6.5 degrees Kelvin per kilometer, or 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit per 100 feet. It is highly variable and depends on surface temperature, time of day, seasons, and other factors. Temperature in this layer decreases to about 12 kilometers. At this altitude, we reach what is called the tropopause. A pause is a break or a change. After the tropopause, we enter the stratosphere. The stratosphere is the second layer of the atmosphere from the surface. In this layer, temperature increases with height, the opposite of what happens in the troposphere. This increase is due to the presence of ozone, which is a greenhouse gas, which heats the layer. Ozone absorbs solar radiation. The maximum amount of ozone, or what we know as the ozone layer, is found between 15 and 30 kilometers above the surface. We study this layer with weather balloons, high-altitude aircraft, and satellites. At the top of this layer, around 50 kilometers, we find the stratopause. Again, remember, a pause is a break or a change. Next, we move into the mesosphere. This is the third highest layer of the atmosphere. This layer extends from about 50 kilometers to about 85 kilometers in the atmosphere. We find the coldest temperatures in this atmospheric layer. It is not privileged to have an external source of heat like the surface for the troposphere or ozone in the stratosphere. Atmospheric pressure in this layer is very, very low since there are much fewer gas molecules here. It is the least studied region due to the low pressure because we can't fly planes and balloons will pop. We have to rely on rockets and satellites to learn about this particular layer. At the top of the mesosphere, we have the mesopause. On top of the mesosphere, we have the thermosphere. This is the uppermost layer of the atmosphere from about 85 kilometers to space. It begins after the mesopause and has no well-defined upper limit. Counterintuitively, temperature begins to increase with height again. This is because temperature is defined as the average speed at which molecules move. Gases in this layer of the atmosphere are moving fast. Even though there are very, very few molecules, they are hotter than those in the lower layers. If an astronaut exposed his or her hand, it would not feel hot because there would be too few molecules impacting his or her hand. That being said, the molecules present at the upper levels of the thermosphere are getting the full brunt of solar radiation as we get closer to the sun. So to summarize today's lecture, we can list some of the key information we've discussed. You need to be familiar with the main components of the atmosphere and know their percentages and how they reached current levels. Those values, again, are 78% for nitrogen, 21% for oxygen, and 1% for argon. You need to be able to identify components of interest, such as CO2, ozone, water vapor, particles, etc. You need to be able to describe the primeval atmosphere and how the current atmosphere evolved by outgassing and photosynthesis. You need to be able to draw and understand how pressure changes with height in the atmosphere. Know altitudes and pressure values as markers to help you draw the diagram from memory. You need to know at what altitude below which we find 50% of the atmosphere, which is approximately 5.5 kilometers. You need to know why pressure and density curves look the way they do. Compressibility of air and gravity are the main reasons. You need to know the standard value of pressure at the surface in its different forms, such as 1,013.25 millibars, 1,013.25 hectopascals, and 29.92 inches of mercury. You need to be able to draw from memory how atmospheric temperature changes with height, know the altitudes and temperature values for the transitions between layers. Be able to identify each of the layers and their boundaries. These include troposphere, tropopause, stratosphere, stratopause, mesosphere, mesopause, and the thermosphere. You need to be able to describe how and why temperature changes in each layer. For our next class, be ready to review atmospheric structure and learn about the ionosphere and aurora. We'll then discuss temperature and methods of heat transfer. Thank you for listening, and I hope you join us again for our next podcast. Goodbye!